Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Clacks Women for Indie podcast. And you'll recall from last week's podcast that the Clacks wifeys have started having virtual coffee meetups by Zoom. And this week we've got together again, slightly different mix of people, which is lovely. Music this week from Ross Bugden again. This one's called Dark Horizons.
I can't see anybody else except Fiona, actually.
Oh, can you not? Right, have a look on your screen and see if there's something that says gallery view, and then you'll get pictures of everybody.
There we go. I can see now.
Is anybody struggling, or is everybody okay?
No, I really hit a low point with the clap yesterday. Not the clap. Oh. I think there's been a lot on the news about, you know, how the health services and social care are basically undermined. And, you know, you get these wee voices of staff here and there trying to put out how they really need help and support and really feeling not listened to. We had loads of noise out in Tilly last night. That's the loudest I've heard everybody. I think I just felt really overwhelmed, and I think that I haven't really lost that since yesterday, really.
I'm having a bit of trouble with this clap. It's starting to feel to me like a displacement, because I think what the NHS people need is proper pay, proper equipment and proper respect. And I think the idea that you can just go stand on your doorstep, clap for a couple of seconds and go back in, job done, tick.
Morphing into other things for different people, because this is only anecdotal, I've only got this from yesterday, but a social work friend of mine from South Gloucestershire that I used to work with, but she said out in her street there was a guy on saxophone, but what was he playing? He was playing God Save the Queen.
Oh, God.
And she was tearing up. You know, I just removed myself from my keyboard at that point, because there's nothing I'm going to say that's going to help here. But it was that juxtaposition, that displacement that you're talking about there, Fiona, where I just thought I couldn't marry those things up.
Can I just point out, there is a massive difference between up here and down south. Testing all the NHS staff in Dundee, in Tayside, since the middle of March. That's not covered in the press. And so what you're reading and what we're getting bombarded with is invariably English. We have to be very, very careful what we're taking in and what we share with other people.
I totally understand.
One of the questions yesterday at Nicola's briefing was basically trying to use the Dundee testing scenario against her, saying they're doing it there, why are you not doing it everywhere else? And she said, yes, it's great, they're an exemplar and we're aiming to achieve that. You know, she turned it on his head, did really well, as she always does. She doesn't get riled with the questions, even though she gets the same question 5 times in succession. So yeah, as you say, Joy, there's lots of stuff out there that we're not hearing, or we are hearing, but it's not getting to the general populace. And my fear is that when this is over, and it will be over at some point, that the general population haven't got the full picture.
And I'd agree with Joy's point about the difference of news from down south.
It's the lovely press for us.
When the figures had just come out about the care homes in Scotland, and she got a barrage of questions. And the only reason they can ask those questions is because we provide the information. They can't ask that in England because they don't get it from England.
They well, though, with the care homes, pointing out that they are, in fact, part of the private sector. And it's something that keeps being lost. That's what was so interesting about the Broadcasting Scotland with Philippa Whitford and the lady from Newcastle.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting fact. The fact that we've got central buying in Scotland, and they don't, principally because of the trusts, which are invariably privatised by the back door NHS.
Joy was absolutely right when she said about how they miss out the private sector, because I've got 2 daughters working in Forth Valley just now, and one of them particularly was saying that care homes that are getting over £600 per person seem to be omitting their responsibility from any argument that they put forward. You know, it's like all to do with the government, and it's all to do with, but she certainly thinks they've got a responsibility that they're not acknowledging completely in the news.
A neighbour is a nurse, and she's in on her third or fourth different role. They keep redeploying them. So she's saying she's now in charge of 30 care homes. But she was saying when she went, she made contact and was arranging to go, they were really kind of antsy and asking for verification of her, exactly who she was, could she prove who she was, because they'd be getting press who are purporting to be healthcare workers trying to get in and get information from the care homes.
You know, another thing, this PPE, we have a small amount of PPE. Nobody needs it around here. They're all fine. So what is this about shortage of, you know, masks?
It's all south of the border. I don't know anybody up here that's short.
Maybe we're okay at the moment, but the Med Drive Supply Scotland, it was started by doctors in Glasgow because they were beginning to see shortages, and I think they're thinking kind of longer term. We want to make sure. So what Neil's doing is finding out where there's PPE that people are willing to donate, and they're mapping it all so that going forward, if there does become a shortage, well, we can go to this company in Denny because they said they've got such and such, and it can be going collected and taken to where it is needed. It's almost like they're decentralising the... It's great to have one bit for the procurement, but we're doing it almost on a local level. And it's a bit like the whole kind of volunteering. See, when they asked for the volunteers down south and they got their 250, and they've done the same thing in Scotland, and I'm thinking, well, do I need to volunteer? What we're doing already, and it might only be something small, but we've got the Wee Street WhatsApp group. Mm-hmm. We'll go out and pick up prescriptions for neighbours and things like that that are isolating.
Keeping up with the NFU Scotland for the workers, because there was a thing looking for seasonal workers, but the nearest place to here was Nicocody, which is a bit far for going out picking.
I haven't seen that. I'd heard about it. Neil's mum had said, I'd been reading about it, and she was thinking of volunteering to go and be like a fruit picker or whatever. I'm like, Hilary, you're 87.
It might be fun for the first half hour, but after 12 hours.
Yeah, and they're usually expecting to be quite fast. We've had the same thing. We've looked at that kind of thing, but then it's been further out than we've been really looking at going. We've kind of thought, well, yeah, we could take the kids, but then we'll just be running up and down bloody raspberry things.
Are they testing people, or are they having people coming in and living in close proximity? And
with one quarter loo between you, and
Say a wee thing about what's actually happening in the hospitals for folk that are actually working there is they're phoning people to come in now to get either checked or to make sure they're okay, because they've always manned the bone lines. This is for certainly folk with like Crohn's or celiac or whatever, and they've been keeping in touch with them. They've had a phone line that's gone, I mean, through the roof at the beginning, and now because there's not been that great upsurge, they're phoning people to say, come in, because they were frightened that folk weren't coming in, even though that they still could, because you've got the red zone, the green zone, and as I say, my pupils are absolutely amazed at the way it's been organised, because they go nowhere near the COVID wards unless...
You can understand people's reticence, can't you, though, because they don't know. And even though they have a red zone and a green zone, does that mean that everybody in the green zone has not come into contact with somebody? And so much of it is the unknown.
Yeah.
Like if I got a phone call saying, come in and get your x-ray for your shoulder, I'd go, oh, just leave it just now. It's not that essential.
Anybody showing COVID symptoms have completely gone in separate areas altogether. There's been wards that were repurposed. So there's certain areas that you wouldn't even get near. And remember, in Forth Valley, the patients have a different corridor system from the public. So therefore, like when I was in and getting operated, the porter comes and gets you, you go through totally different corridors altogether. Because I used to say to them, how do you know where you're going? Because they're not even marked. It's almost like there's double corridors so that public and patient are completely separate. They're wearing masks the whole time, no matter where they are or who they're dealing with, you know. Actually, on the ground, it's as quite as reported, but you wouldn't know that unless you actually know people that are actually there working away every day, you know.
We have a paramedic friend who works locally, trained with Steve back in the day, so she's been a paramedic for quite some time. And she was very concerned about hospital admissions, and that was about the fact that they had separated into COVID symptoms and not symptomatic, and she couldn't align this with, you know, the need test before you even get in through that front door. was very concerned. I mean, in her role anyway, they are first on scene to somebody, so they absolutely do not know what they're dealing with as part of their everyday work. This just adds another layer to it. So I need to catch up with her and say, right, are you still feeling some concerns about how that whole process is happening, or have there been other things put in that make you feel more reassured about basically the transmission of infection at that point?
That's fine, they're separating symptomatic and asymptomatic, but because you're presenting as asymptomatic doesn't mean you don't have. Well, we've had a wheelchair dumped in our street. So maybe somebody's had a miracle cure and got up and walked away.
Johnson said he was ready to come back to work.
Oh my God.
I wonder if he will come back on Monday, as he's threatening to come back, and if his attitude will have changed any after his, what we assume was his experience.
I was waiting for Boris's update to see how he was. What a chancer he is. How is he getting away with it?
I'm reading a new book. It's in Scots. It's called The Way For It, and it's all about the independence movement. The Way For It.
Oh, right, The Way For It, yeah, got it.
It's a Dundonian. It's a Dundonian historian that's wrote it, and it's talking about all the laws and everything that Westminster's broke.
Ooh.
And apparently there's a man from the City of London, it's something like the Remembrance or something like that, and he sits behind the speaker, and he's there. He sees all the draft bills, he's got access to the House of Commons, the House of Lords, and it's to protect the interests of the City of London.
Can you imagine doing your pastels at the moment? Because it always cheers me to see your pastel.
Yeah, Brother sent me a nice photo of the cherry blossom. So I did a really close up of the cherry blossom. But I've got four petals done.
I'm finding that there's some things haven't changed though. I always have like lots of things on the go, everything kind of half done, and it's still the same now. So I started doing slates for neighbours for their drives, and then I started making masks, and one of the neighbours is making scrub sacks for various places. So I'm like, oh, I could have a go at that as well. So I had a sterling joy.
Well, cool. I'll just carry on as I've always done, working away.
Missing seeing the grandchildren, that's a bit of torture. But we video call, and I hate to switch off, you know, at the video call, and I just always end up keep on and laughing, you know. So it's become a bit of a thing now in the family, trying to stop the video call before I actually, you know.
It does make a difference, though, at least being able, like this, to see people. Well, you're not physically with them, but at least you're able to see them.
Yeah.
For people that are struggling, because everyone at some point goes through a phase of either being really anxious or really angry, and then you get to being, no, I'm quite chilled with this. But then I think about people that we've got savings, but there's other people who don't. They're like meals away from starvation, you know, type of thing. And you do worry about that as well.
Last night at that big night programme, I thought for a lot of people said if you want to text £10, you want to text £20. And I thought there'll be a lot of people that don't have a tenner who will be watching that and feeling they would like to do it, but can't.
Or they'll do it, but they can't afford it.
Did you not see that? I was on one of the groups where Greg had put a post on saying he's got a solution. He says there's like 40 billionaires in the UK. Between them, they've got £190 billion. We'll just kill them, keep their money and distribute it, and that way it'll be fine. But then, because no doubt these billionaires will be friends of Boris Johnson, his attitude then to sacrificing people for keeping the economy going might change, because he actually knows these people. Because what he is doing effectively is sacrificing people to save the economy, but it's people he doesn't know or doesn't give a care about.
Well, it's one of the billionaires, Branson, because he's wanting us to pay him to keep his airline afloat. The guy runs a bank. He's got his own bank and he's asking us for money.
I've forgotten about that, actually.
But surely we should be going down the same route as the other European countries. That if you don't pay tax in here, you don't get a bailout.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's pretty much the south of the border, and the Boris Johnson lovers will follow that one through.
I feel there's a kind of shift in but how the First Minister's being viewed, and you certainly notice it through The Guardian. It's overwhelmingly positive what's being said about her just now.
She's also got the advantage of when she does her daily briefing before the UK one, so they're kind of on the back foot.
Well, then the government's just put out this paper about, we don't know all the detail about how we're going to exit this, but here's the principles and here's what we've got to think about, and you're all grown-ups, and I'm just sharing with you where we are. And what does Matt Hancock do? He goes, you know, she's just rehashed what I said 3 weeks ago. And he said nothing 3 weeks ago. All he said was...
And he's still saying nothing.
He's still saying nothing. Yeah. But what a pouty, petulant little schoolboy.
Yeah,
doesn't
there's
want to
a
be...
bit of a maturity filter. I mean, you know, you can see that with the trolls' comments as well. You know, they just think, right, okay, so don't comment then. I mean, they're putting it out there for you to comment. If you feel you don't want to comment, nobody's going to be able to force you.
The exit cast last night, it was Sarah Smith was phoning. She was on from her flat in Glasgow, and she actually was very good about Nicola Sturgeon. She said, oh, you can see your head growing up, Sarah, and they kind of laughed at that. But she really kind of stuck it to them, because she said, no, Nicola Sturgeon said this or did that or did the next thing. And it was actually quite supportive of Nicola Sturgeon, I thought.
This is seismic shift. This is completely different. There will come a point when the media starts to shift in our favour. And here you see the chinks in that happening.
Because if they don't switch in our favour, they're not going to have it. They see what we, the public's kind of feeling and thinking, we want to be with the majority. And if the majority now is on the other side from where they were, if they don't switch to that, you know.
Yesterday, it really did stand out a mile when Nicola Sturgeon gave her full appraisal of everything. She's very honest, she's very sincere, and then you get the blubbering and, what would you say, the nonsense that's coming out of Hancock's mouth yesterday was ridiculous. After we've seen Nicola Sturgeon, the app that they're talking about isn't ready. And I just think they're incompetent and all of the lying to try and make something look good, but it's not even ready, you know?
And that's where Nicola's different, is she, and I think a lot of women, they can say, I don't know, and not feel as if they've had their balls cut off.
At the end of this, there's going to be so much artwork that's been created, or literature and things like that, because people are turned into things because you've got that little bit more time.
This isn't us, but something that my father-in-law is doing up in Cromarty is one of his many talents is singing. And so he records a video of a different song every day and posts it. And
still encouraged by Facebook, because everybody's still so political and folk are just getting, like, saying all the things I want to, but I don't need to know because other folks saying it. It's great.
We're to do a little 30-second promo for the radio. There was a live stream the other day of Kevin Gore playing, and I'm watching that, and just at the end, up comes the 3 30-second promos. I'm going, that's me on YouTube. It's so weird.
I missed it, damn it.
I think there's a lot of people, though, whether they would be for indie yet or not, must be looking at the First Minister and thinking, you are a leader. I mean, I think there's people must appreciate what she's able to do.
I think they're also appreciating what she can't do, sadly.
Yes.
And if that isn't the best reason to get independence, then what is? If everybody wants her to do these things that she can't.
Yeah.
So I think it's the can't do that's quite important as well.
She's very good at making the point when it is a Westminster issue.
Good job.
She'll say that. She'll highlight that every time. And I think... She will keep doing that because it's making the point with many people, because lots of people that wouldn't ordinarily listen to her are maybe listening to the briefing every day.
Yeah. Well, we sure can talk, can't we? That was the Clark's Wifey coffee meetup this week. What I'm going to play next is a holdover from last week, because I didn't have time to fit it in last week. So there's references to a Sunday Times article being this weekend, which actually was last weekend. But it's quite an interesting little discussion piece, I think, from Neil, who I think has some interesting insights into the political situation that's emerging. So see what you think of this.
This is Lynn, the roving reporter for Clack's Wifey podcast. I have roved all the way from my home office / slate painting room next door into my husband's headquarters, otherwise known as his man cave. And Neil's going to have a wee chat with us about some of the stuff he's discovered through all his reading this weekend about the current situation we find ourselves in.
I think you can look basically for indications as to what's going to happen in the next few months based on scientific predictions, economic predictions, indicators of how the NHS are performing, lots of different inputs into it, and lots of decisions to be made by the UK government, which, as you know, is receiving a tremendous amount of criticism at the moment and will continue to do so as this rolls on. So if you look at who's in charge of it all at the moment, you have obviously Boris Johnson, who has been very much absent for the entire year. He's been absent from all the Cobra meetings. He's been taking more holidays than anything else. But he's gradually coming back to what is known as the Quad. This is the new terminology for the key cabinet ministers who you're going to see so much more of. So that's Hancock in charge of health, although he's already so overwhelmed with so much work to do that he's gigging other people into it. So the analysis of the whole different ways that the cabinet are splitting things up is quite important as well, because different people have different priorities. So, for example, they've just appointed an ex-Goldman Sachs banker to be the czar of PPE on behalf of the health service, because obviously Hancock's also got to deal with the fact that he can't get any ventilators, he can't get any PPE, he can't get his testing done. So it's failure after failure after failure. So there's other people that come into the picture. But going back to this quad of people, so we've got Hancock there. Gove is the one who apparently has been selected to decide, or to be the sort of principal guy to decide on when we reopen up the economy, the plan for that. He's a sort of, he's the czar of our future in terms of when it all opens up again. You've obviously got Rishi Sunak, who is completely overwhelmed with the fact that none of his financial packages, schemes are working. The predictions which he and the rest in the quad have been looking at by the OBR are catastrophic for the British economy. All the modelling that's been done shows that basically not only is it going to be a depression, it's going to be the end of British business as we know it. So that's been the principal factor that is influencing the quad decision-making process in terms of how rapidly you open up the economy. So the predictions are that in 12 weeks' time, if we continue in the lockdown and everything goes as badly as it's still going, the OBR basically say that it's a catastrophe for the economy and everything is really gone to bits. There's nothing left. So the pressure on the quad is to come up with decisions as to how to open up the economy. And the Sunday Times is pivotal in all this information that's coming out today, because they've got a whole lot of leakers, obviously, that have been giving them information from the financial world, the science world, and they've been collating lots of data over a long period of time. So they are the sort of harbingers of all this information I'm giving you as well, which you can corroborate quite well, because that the Sunday Times newspaper was published yesterday, and already many of the announcements, or much of the information I'm giving you just now, has just been announced by Gavin Williamson, who isn't part of the Quad, but is obviously in the cabinet. They just wheel these guys out. And it principally guys.
So is that a case of it's your turn to go and take a bullet now, because we've all taken it and we've been found out, so somebody else's turn to be put up in front of the press.
Yeah, absolutely that. And so they're in complete denial of all the newspaper reports, and they've really done nothing to to confront all the various allegations against him. But the one strong denial they have put up today was that the schools would be going back mid-May. They don't like that idea coming out. That's one of the things that's published in the Sunday Times. Everything else that's been put out by the Sunday Times has more or less been left either unchallenged or has actually been stated as government policy. Dominic Raab, right. So obviously he was the number two when Boris was...
The designated survivor.
Yeah, when Boris was out of the road for a while. And he's seen very much as a hawk now.
Well, explain what you mean by hawk. Are they just like hovering above waiting to pick people off?
Well, no, it's how they open up the country and how you do it. And if you're going to be cautious, then you're definitely not a hawk. So the sort of ones supposedly more cautious up until now have been Gove and Hancock. And the aggressive ones have been Rishi and Dominic Raab, who want to get things crash, bang, wallop back into it again. So the OBR report, they've been discussing that, and to be frank with you, I think it's changed opinions so that they don't want this catastrophe. It's the end of Everett. It's been the end of the Tories as well. So they've now adopted this new mantra, which is to go hot. And this is the phraseology you might hear mentioned more often. So what they've done is they've thought, right, we've got to get everything open as fast as possible. So how do we do that? How do we go hot? Go hot implies a sort of element of risk, which is exactly what it is, because it means that before you completely get things under control, you open things up and run the risk not only of more infection, which you're going to get from running hot, but you're running risk of the multiple peak scenarios, so repeated peaks. So they're weighing up the economy versus the risk of further viral peaks and stuff like that. But they keep going back to the OBR and they keep going back to this catastrophe and they're saying, nah, we've got 12 weeks. So again, you've got to look at the timescale. We've got 12 weeks to sort this, to fix this. So that means gradually opening things up. Which there's back to this opening up of schools, for example. Some of the schools, primary schools, in mid-May, which they've absolutely denied today. And then opening up like transport services, construction, and then, you know, going on, escalating up the scale gradually. And what this does is it spreads the virus again. And so you're running hot, and so what you have is you've had the big peak. You're beginning to come down the other side of the peak through April into May, if things go according to plan. And you're beginning then to think about immediately opening up again in mid-May. So your NHS, which has been striving to suppress this immense pressure... Yeah. What they don't realise is that in the NHS, that not only is there going to be no relief from this, they're going to be more or less guaranteed that the pressure's going to continue just under boiling again. So when you see the likes of the Nightingale hospitals, which are very much under capacity, you're then looking at one of the other stats that they're looking at, which is the capacity of hospitals and how they've managed to maintain themselves during the present peak. So they've looked at it and they've thought, well, you know what? We haven't used the Nightingales. We've still got lots of bed spare capacity. And so if we're running hot, the idea is then that we can get additional patients into the NHS, into the Nightingales, and basically the whole thing would be chuntering along, highly infectious all the time, highly risky, but they balance against that, of course, that the country's not going to go bankrupt. And this is what they're seeking not to do, because go bankrupt, ruin their reputations and all the rest of it.
Have they considered how people are feeling and how people are thinking perhaps they don't want to go back to the work, regardless of what the government say to them? They think, no, I'm not prepared to risk my life. It's apparent that the government are happy to risk our lives, but people maybe... not prepared to do it. And I know people will be forced into it because they need money to pay for food and bills, etc. But there's a whole swathe of people who are very much against rushing back.
And when you look at that as well, it becomes really even more complicated. Because if you reflect, for example, on a couple of things there, what's happening in America, you've got people out in the streets demonstrating they want to go back to work. And depending on how that was directed, if they followed the Trumpian line, you could see how let's get Britain going again style messaging could be used to their advantage, which goes totally against the let's protect the NHS message, of course, because all these poor people who have died on behalf of us in the NHS in the current epidemic phase, then they're going on to the next phase and the next phase and the next phase. So there's that aspect. There's also the aspect of how we diverge as countries. So Nicola's laid down a line in the sand almost. She said, you know, I am prepared to take us down a different course of action. You see Ian Blackford messaging about that today as well, saying, yeah, you got a great Scottish welcome, but we can't afford our old population up here to get exposed to this too early. So, you know, your tour season is going to be postponed indefinitely. He's sending out messaging, which is to like that the tourist railway that they want to open up and all the holiday homes getting reopened and stuff like that again. So you've got waves of pressure coming from the UK government to do one thing, and then the Scottish government could say, no, I'm not going to do this schools opening thing, or I'm not going to do... You have this divergence then. But any divergence anywhere worldwide causes problems ultimately for everybody, of course. And there's no guarantee that they've solved the PPE problem just because they've appointed a blooming czar to it. He's apparently to look at the British industry for the first time because basically they've just ignored British industry up to now and relied upon the normal lines of procurement, which have proven to be under great stress worldwide.
Or they've ignored British industry that isn't owned by Tory donors.
Yeah, well, there's that as well. But you can see that the next 12 weeks, instead of looking at it purely from a medical point of view of the five tests which were laid out by Dominic Raab, for example, as to why and how and when you could open up the economy again, you can see that immediately they begin to conflict with their own tests as to when they should open up the economy, because the dilemma for them as they see it is that nothing's working and the whole economy goes bust. One thing, you're always looking for little indicators. I think that as the peak dies down, I think if you look to the Nightingale hospitals and look how well they become equipped, or how much they re-equip them, because up until now there's no ventilators in them, it's just basically beds, and how they look to garner staff to them, because they're, one of the things as well they're saying in NHS down south is that the use of the Nightingale hospital, they issued a directive on that yesterday saying that if you're sending patients to the hospital, then we want you to send doctors and nurses for 12 weeks with the patient's incoming. Now, that correlation of 12 weeks kind of fits into what I'm saying with the 12-week scenario for the breakdown of everything that happened.
How realistic is that? Because the doctors and nurses have families to look after, have parents to look after. So how realistic is it to expect them to leave their home for 12 weeks? I mean, where are they going to be housed?
I have no idea. And it's not just that. I mean, it's how do you get them all there? Do you put them in minibuses with the patients? You're not in ambulances? They've not got enough ambulances. The logistics for that kind of thing, transferring patients from region to region to take capacity away from certain areas, then... there's just so many balls up in the air. It's the ultimate juggle, isn't it? So
yeah, it is a big balls up, isn't it?
There's no doubt about that whatsoever. And so, having failed completely with testing, with ventilators, with PPE, all the essential ingredients you need from the word go to beat the pandemic, and obviously there's these veils of secrecy over the various medical teams involved. But there's veils of secrecy all the way through. Now, one other character I haven't mentioned so far is Dominic Cummings. And he's back, apparently, in with the Quad, making useful suggestions. he was very much instrumental in the herd immunity, although he would completely deny it. He apparently was one of the characters that pursued that, and they had to abandon the whole strategy early on. He's given his insights into reflections on the comparison that 100 years ago we had the Great Flu after the war. And so, albeit that that is a similar tragedy that's unfolding, like history repeating itself, the big mistakes they've already made in comparing their whole pandemic strategy to a flu strategy are look like being repeated again. They were under an immense degree of criticism for all their present planning way back January, February, based on it being like flus, as opposed to a SARS lethal, much more lethal style pandemic. So Dominic's back in there. Boris, I think you can expect to hear more of, but it's essentially this quad now, off men. There's no mention of many other people, but I think as things deteriorate, you'll see other Tory ministers getting dragged in and becoming czars for this, that and the next bloody thing. So I hope that's given you a wee insight.
Excellent, and we shall leave it all there, that cheery news that Westminster are continuing to fail us. No surprise there then. Thank you very much, Neil.
Right, that's about everything we've got for you this week. In a week when it was revealed that Cummings is a secret member on the scientific committee that is SAGE, that's been advising the government. So I think there's lots more of that story to come. And also President Trump advised everybody to inject bleach to cure the virus. So from Clacks Women for Indy, definitely don't inject any bleach. In fact, don't do anything Trump tells you ever is probably a good watchword. Remember, if you want to catch our show as it's broadcast on Indy Live Radio, it's 10 o'clock on a Tuesday and 6 o'clock on a Thursday. And then the poetry show is at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And if you miss all of those, you can get it on the Podbean channel. It's yescowlpodbean.com. So thanks for listening. And remember to please support Indy Live Radio, new voices for a new Scotland, and hear the news you're not getting. Bye now.